Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lasswolf. Joining me, as always, are my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
What has a barcode, but you can't buy it? What can see you, but you can't see it? If it kills you, it's justified, and it might just be on your homeland.
Is it Timothy Oliphant?
Okay.
Close, it's close.
I was about to say one hand clapping.
What?
The sound of one hand clapping.
The terribly adequate movie, Hitman.
Oh,
Hitman,
okay.
And then Hitman Agent 47. Ugh.
Ooh, man.
Painfully Wait. Adequate.
You know, I guess those movies are so bad, and I kind of like mentally tune out when I see those movies that I didn't necessarily realize that there is one of them a sequel.
I don't know what they are.
Are they meant to be the same franchise kind of thing?
I don't know.
Okay, because I didn't know. I thought you were put together because they were, and I was shocked.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
Do they both have a shaved head?
Yeah. And it's terrible because Oliphant and Rupert Friend, the two hitmen, have great hair.
Yeah.
And listen, I was watching Homeland today, right? We were watching Homeland Season 5, right? And there's a scene where Rupert Friend. Oh. That's not a spoiler, I guess. But there's a scene where Rupert Friend has more personality in 10 seconds than he does in the entire Hitman movie. And, like, they're just painfully subpar.
But, like, in Hitman, they're, like, raised by murderous monks or something to be killers, right?
I don't remember.
Like, it was that good. It had that
I
kind of
blocked it
impact.
Out. All I remember is I watched the Hitman was on cable. And I think we were in between Euro games. It was during the weekend, so I was waiting for another soccer game to come on, and we just flipped it over to Hitman real quick. And I didn't like it because it was like baby Oliphant. And I didn't my wife was like, he doesn't look as felt. Like he looked kind of like baby fat Oliphant.
Baby fat Oliphant.
Chubby Oliphant.
Yeah, right. I was like, I don't like this. Yeah.
Before he was all sleek like a mongoose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, before he was Ricky Tikki Tavi.
He's very sleek.
And he uses like accent in the first Hitman. He was very like Kentuckian, like it's very southern. So I'm watching this Hitman in Moscow with like a weird accent. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here.
It's just another in a long line of failed video game adaptations. I don't know why people keep trying. Like you'll never make a good video game movie.
Like, I wish Nash would have been in it from Street Fighter, Chris Klein.
Oh, yeah. Another great video game adaptation, I might add.
Like, you know how I passed out? Like, John and I went to see Legend of Street Fighter, Chung Li, and I passed out about 45 minutes in.
Yeah.
If we went to go see the first Hitman together, I'd be out in the first 5 minutes.
Right.
From Coors Light.
Yeah. I mean, mass quantities of it, too. Coors Light!
It was a lot of Coors Light.
Yeah. So... I would say on the enjoyment scale, Hitman are not up there. But I like Rupert Friend and Oliphant, so I'll,
watch it. How late would you pass out on Coors Light watching Wanted?
Wanted?
I would make it...
Like, would you get past the bullet bending scene?
Okay, so here I am. All right, so
the curved bullet?
So I'm walking in the theater, right? John and I have had about 10 Coors Lights each. You know, we stop at the thing. We get, like, a popcorn or something. We get there a little early. You know, I eat the popcorn. I get nice and settled in my comfy chair nowadays. Mm. The lights go down. The previews come up. I like one preview, right? So it kind of boosts, you know, I get up there. You know, I feel good. Like, I'm excited for Poseidon 2. Then, you know, the movie starts, right? Credits go. I'm sleepy, right? Because I'm in this recliner, right? I would say about 15 minutes in when James McAvoy was doing some expository dialogue or running or something stupid. I'm out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I wake up at about 47 minutes. I ask Lazo, hey, man, what's up? What would I miss? And then he's sleeping.
Yep.
So I'm like, well, if he's sleeping, I'm going back to sleep. So then I fall asleep. Then he wakes up, asks me what happens. Yeah. He says the same thing I just said. And then we sleep through the credits. No one wakes us up. The movie starts again. And we both wake up and we're like, this movie's long.
Yeah.
It was, and they still haven't curved a bullet. And I've been here 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think I saw this last time.
Yeah.
My review is like, it repeats the same thing twice.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, it got towards the end. I kind of dozed off a little bit. And all of a sudden, we're back at the beginning. Like, what's going on here?
What is this, Reservoir Dogs? Is this a non-linear film? I don't get you, Wanted.
Oh, 11 good. How long would you last watching Wanted? Drunk on Coors Light.
I survived that whole movie. I did. Really? I survived the movie.
Sober?
I don't think I was sober.
Right.
But then again, if I don't remember that well, I probably wasn't. Wasn't Morgan Freeman like the head of their evil organization?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Weren't they trying to cleanse the world of bad people or something? It was ridiculous.
I remember a scene on a train, but I think that was Salt.
Yeah.
Or the Wolverine.
I remember Angelina Jolie had like this really weird back tattoo. Or something.
Wasn't that her real tattoo?
Was it? I don't know.
She's got a lot of tattoos.
I don't really keep up with Angelina Jolie's tattoos in real life.
And speaking of henchmen on trains dying because they're dum-dums and going on trains, I was watching the first Captain America again. I was really surprised with it. But there's a scene where a dum-dum henchman follows Captain America on a dum-dum henchman escaping from the plane. I'm like, why would you jump on Captain America's back on a moving vehicle? You're not going to survive. No. Get in another plane and chase it. That's why Hydra lost. They had some dum-dums fighting for him.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen the first Captain America.
They use that henchman temp agency.
Yeah, they don't get vetted. Like, there should be a test, all right? Captain America jumps on one of your cronies' flying missile. Mm. What do you do? A, get in another one and follow them. B, just run away and let Red Skull know. C, jump on Captain America's back and fly through the air without a parachute.
D, you know what I mean? Sneak away, fly off to like Hawaii and just live the rest of your life in relative peace.
Yeah, just go to Cabo.
Yeah, seriously.
Sell the missile. I would fly the missile, sell it for a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in 1940, whatever the thing was, 42 to 45, whenever, I don't know, that thing would go for a big old price, right? Boom, go to Argentina.
Nice.
Specifically Argentina.
Yeah. You're set. You can have a house in the mountains with a Sherpa and a yak, and you're golden.
I don't think they have either of those things in Argentina.
Oh, there's Sherpas. Oh, that's Peru. That's Peru. That's Machu Picchu.
Hey, let me go. What episode was it where we actually talked about henchmen and like the advice we gave them?
Oh, I think 45.
45? Yeah.
I think it's 45. Are you checking? Are you checking to see if I'm right?
I'm not.
I think it's 45.
Yeah, listeners, if you're curious, we actually did an entire episode about giving out advice to movie henchmen. It was based. The rundown was basically just don't listen to like your orders. Just leave.
They don't have your best interests in mind, guys.
No, like these villains, it's all about them. They don't care about you.
Yep, you're cannon fodder.
Oh, guys, I just checked. It's episode 43.
John, we're writing you up. Lazbath, put it on a piece of paper and throw it on the floor.
43. Right.
That's your first write-up, Levin Good. You get about a million of them, so you're okay.
I feel like an Ecuadorian soccer player bowing his head to a yellow card.
Wow, that's a pretty specific, metaphor.
That's like exactly how it feels.
Okay. All right. I think it's time to basically start this podcast like we do every podcast, but I think it's different this time, right? Am I good?
Well, I mean, it's different, but it's the same. I mean, because we're going to start with listener questions.
I think that's like the perfect way to describe listener questions. It's different, but it's the same.
And then we're going to continue with more listener questions, and then we'll go for a break, come back with the listener question and more listener questions.
Yep. Well, we had a good surplus. 11 Good, you had a good surplus stored up. So we wanted to, you know, listeners are what make our show, that and our wonderful voices. So we wanted to let our listeners know that we care about their questions.
You know, I think it's that our listeners have gotten a lot better. You know, you listen to enough episodes, you really get a good feel for the zaniness and unpredictability of the listener question. Like in our last episode where we were asked about Gamora in Black Leather, but me and Robert Lamb thought it was Gamora, the turtle monster from Godzilla. And so, you know, therein lies the magic. So normally when I reach out to Facebook, friends, Twitter for listener questions, you know, it's tough to get a couple of listener questions that really fit our paradigm, right? Because one, our listener questions can't have a right answer. They cannot. We'll give you an answer, but it can't have a right answer. Mm. And two, we want it to be really kind of random, off the wall, preferably very specific. And yeah, so this time I got a whole lot. And just like about 10 weeks ago when we last did an episode like this, we've got 6 listener questions for you guys.
And somebody on Facebook on the MFF page was like, hey, I watched this movie. Have you watched Maniac Cop as a joke?
That's right. That was our frequent listener question contributor, Dirty D from Melbourne, Australia. He said, what was it? Man, he said, I watched Hush on your recommendation. Have you seen Maniac Cop yet?
I almost exploded like that dude on Big Trouble in Little China. You know when that guy just goes, and he has a very anticlimactic, smushy blow up.
You know, no one's ever talked about the steam coming out of that puffy, that exploding henchman's nose. Like, was it just Snot Rocket City going down his shirt?
Probably was.
Like, we never explore that after he explodes.
I mean, when you blow up, juices are everywhere.
I'd like to know more about that guy and his history. Someone should write a book about that character and his death.
I mean, he basically just committed suicide.
I mean, that's... I want to understand him and the physics of his death.
I want to know about his warm-up.
I think we need to just skip right into question, or skip, safely transition out of our madness into listener question number one of this episode. It comes from Neil from Greenville, South Carolina. He has a very elaborate and specific question. He says, my favorite band, Umphrey's McGee, who I never heard of, on Halloween does mashups of multiple songs into one song, like Come As Your Kids, combining Nirvana's Come As You Are and Kids by MGMT. What would be your favorite funny mashups of two movies? For example, Jurassic Creed, the story of a short-armed T-Rex battling it out in the ring to live up to his father's name from the first movie.
Right. Jeez Louise.
I do like it when our listeners give us for examples, because it lets me know exactly like where they're thinking of for their questions.
Right.
All right. So I have a few. We'll probably go through a few here. I don't know which one's my best, but I want to see. All right. So there's a movie called The Darkest Hour, right? And in this movie, it's Emil Hirsch, Max Minghella, some other people. Good-looking 20-somethings, and they're in Moscow, and they're dealing with invisible aliens. So it's just them – basically, if you watch the movie, it's the four of these characters just looking at stuff for 2 hours. Like, they're not looking – like, they're like, look. And it's just them looking. So I want to have them meet the Hollow Man, because it would just be them looking around for another movie.
You know, I remember watching that movie, The Darkest Hour. I just thought that there was an electrical storm and they were on mushrooms.
Like, seriously, like the whole movie, they're like, look. Like, if you go look at stills or our posts on movies, films, and flicks, it's just them looking at nothing. Like, what do you see? I don't see anything. What do you see?
I don't see anything. What do you see? I don't see anything either. All right, well, let's walk 20 feet. Walk 20 feet. What do you see? I don't see anything.
And then there's a scene where it's about 50 people looking at stuff you don't see. And they're all like, and you're like, what are they looking at? Well, we don't know because we can't see it. It's like the worst idea for a horror film is just having a bunch of people look at stuff that's not there.
That actually reminds me. Sometimes, like, shows do this kind of movie trivia thing where they'll give you an image still from a movie, and then they'll Photoshop out, like, one of the characters, and they'll be like, what movie is this? And you're supposed to know it's Forrest Gump because of the bench and a feather flying in the air or something. It's like, this seems like one of those where they just keep Photoshopping out the bad guys.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, what do you see? I don't know. How do we know if we see him? Let's put light bulbs down on the ground. Yeah. And then all you see is light bulbs lighting up. And you're like, geez, wait, like, what is this movie?
Dude, first off, I don't like that they did that unless they want to directly give credit to the movie The Prestige.
Yeah.
When Tesla had lit up the town by sticking light bulbs in the snow.
I tell you, though, I would like it if Kevin Bacon was involved, because then they would just be looking at stuff and occasionally attacked.
You know what I mean? True. And was it mirrors or glass? It was glass or something that made them invisible. And if they were holding up glass in front of Hollow Man, he'd just throw a rock through it. Like, he was mean, remember? Because that serum didn't just make him invisible. It would actually, like, increase his aggression and turned him psychotic.
Yeah.
And the invisible crazy man.
You have an angry Bacon chasing club goers down. Like, I could live with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and then it'd just be them looking around, you know, like, where's Kevin Bacon at? I would love that. I'm over here. Ooh, invisible Kevin Bacon's over there. You know, like, I'd be invested. You know what I'm saying? Like, it'd be like Paranormal Activity. You were just sitting there looking for, like, things to happen. You're like, where's Bacon? Where's Bacon? You know?
So what would the title be of that movie?
I can smell the bacon.
Where's the bacon?
Where's the bacon? The darkest bacon. It's like burnt bacon.
Mm. The bacon hour.
Nice.
The bacon hour.
You're listening to the bacon hour. Come on in and sizzle.
I just pulled up. I figured I'd go with 2016 movies specifically. Not that there's any reason I have to. And I noticed that Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice and Captain America Civil War were right next to each other in Google for 2016 movies. And I just thought, like, Batman versus Superman Civil War or Captain America Dawn of Justice. I guess either of those would be totally watchable average movies.
Yeah. Wait. Average? Captain America? So they would offset each other.
Yeah,
they'd also, instead of one being so upsetting to fans and one being so satisfying, just be two average movies. But like, so then I started realizing, like, if you were to actually cross those movies, and so I'm simultaneously giving two answers because it's like a swap, right? But if you were to cross the hero characters in each of those movies, I think that the heroes from each original movie would solve the opposing movie more efficiently. Hmm. So I want you to think, you got that. What was the bad guy played by?
Baron Zemo?
Yeah, Baron Zemo. If you had Baron Zemo and he was facing Bruce Wayne with his resources, and he's very Iron Man equivalent, but he is not going to listen to any rules, right? He's just like, screw the rules. And then you have Superman with his power, and he's like everyone else. And he's also like, I'm not so fond of, you know, these rules being imposed on me. I'm just trying to save the world. So they're both ignoring all the rules, and they bring to the table some similar cross-section of characters that our Civil War characters have. And then if you swap it and you put Captain America, Spider-Man, Ant-Man, and all of them against Doomsday, I feel like it's got to turn out better than Batman sitting around being useless in that fight, right? I mean, come on. You got Spidey. He's basically as strong as Superman. People don't like to realize that, but even 1950s comics acknowledge that they were among the top five strongest characters. Captain America's got his shield. Wonder Woman's got her fancy shield. Come on. Like, I think that it would turn out at least as well, if not better, if they traded bad guys.
That sounds depressing, because then it'd be a bunch of good heroes fighting a CGI turd.
but you wouldn't have one of the coolest ones totally wasted.
Wait, so Wonder Woman, is she in Captain America: Dawn of Justice?
Yeah.
So is she trying to, what hard drive is she? Is Lex Luthor still the bad guy, or is Lex Luthor in?
No, now it's Zemo.
Wait. So Lex Luthor is the bad guy in Civil War?
He's fighting our Avengers. They're just swapping bad guys.
I would not give Captain America any of my bourbon if I was Lex Luthor, because Captain America can't get drunk.
Too much muscle mass? Like Nate, is
he literally can't.
Under there?
No, he can't because, exactly, but he heals too much. So, like, if Captain America came to my house and was like, hey, is that Pappy Van Winkle? I'd be like, no, it's Schlitzky's. Well, that says Pappy Van Winkle on the label. I just do that to lie. You don't want it. And if he goes to make a move for it, I'd be like, you're going to steal? You're being a bully, Captain America? Hey, man, I just want some drink. I give him some Four Roses or some Buffalo Trace.
Yeah.
Or some 151.
And by the way, Black Panther and Batman, oddly similar.
Hmm.
Rich guys, yeah.
Rich, very resourceful, more secret with their identity, great warriors, very protected suits.
Yeah.
Wait, no, Black Panther's not really, it's not a secret identity. Like, it's just kind of out in the open. Like, yeah, I'm Black Panther. I'm also a prince, so.
Yeah, but no one knew that the prince was Black Panther. That was handed down generation after generation, and no one knew it was his family lineage that was Black Panther.
But then he showed it during the movie. He took off his mask.
Oh, yeah.
And went, you got nothing on me.
Yeah.
I don't know why Black Panther's talking like that. Sorry, Chadwick.
You have any more, Living Good?
I also had, this was just kind of silly. I don't necessarily think this is a good idea, but I came up with Teenage Purging Deadpool Shallows.
Oh, nice.
Teenage Purging Deadpool Shallows is the story of a group of four young mutant shark humanoids out on a government-sanctioned manhunt, but are foiled by Ryan Reynolds.
Nice.
I like it.
That one was pretty forced, though. That was actually the first thing I came up with.
Nice.
Hey, Lasvath, before you unleash your doozy, I got to put one out there.
Okay.
Dr. No meets Yes Man.
Ooh.
So, as you know, Dr. No in the book, his name, he changed his name. In the book I'm talking about, not the movie Dr. No. Yeah. But in the book, he made his name Julian No. They changed his name to that in regards to his dad's first name was Julian, and he hated his dad. So Julian No, which is pretty ridiculous if you think about it.
Pretty edgy.
Yeah, so you have he's very emo. He likes Secure.
Yeah.
So you have a guy that's like, no. And then he meets the Yes Man. And then the two of them go raving. They drink Red Bull.
Yeah. So they offset each other.
Yeah, one of them doesn't have hands.
Yeah.
Dr. No doesn't have hands.
Yeah.
And it's just Dr. No learning to live again with the Yes Man. Right?
Yeah. I'd watch it. It would...
I like that.
He would change his... Like, in the end, he's like, listen, I'm still going to say no to things, but I'll change my name to Dr. Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Which means, you want to go get a drink? No. Or, you want to go drink? Yeah, no. Nope. Yeah. Like, nope's much less. So it's kind of you're open to it. You're just not available at the moment.
Yeah.
So he's like, I still have to be who I am. You're the yes man. I'm the no man. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know what I'm saying?
There's a deep moral to this story.
You got to be who you want. You can't change, no matter how much Red Bull and raving and Zoe Deschanel and quick trips to Nebraska. You're still going to be a no man.
Nice. Nice. I don't even know what to say to that. Okay. I guess it's my turn. I got a couple here. One of them is pretty, I guess they're all really forced. But
oh, no.
Some of them are more forced than the others. But
I feel like Jurassic Creed was just like the winner right when he gave it as the example.
Oh, I think the jury's still out. Let's see. Okay, so my first one is, it's not too forced, not anything bad. But I want to mash up Insidious and Ghostbusters.
Oh.
Yeah. I just think it'd be funny to see, like, Egon and Venkman and, and the rest of the crew, like, take on the, was it the red demon?
Oh, right? Gosh, the red lipstick demon.
Yeah, the red lipstick demon. I just want to see him, like, fumbling around in, like, the nether world or whatever.
Whoa, hold on now. Is someone going to get, like, straight up murdered, though? People die in those movies.
We'll see. We'll see.
Are we going to lose?
It's a mashup. No, it's a mashup.
Is Egon going to, like, die?
Well, I mean,
they'll
Bill Murray's going to break his legs and do crunchy walking.
No, like, I'm seriously legit nervous about my Ghostbusters now because people die in those movies.
Do Elise, Tucker, and Specs make an appearance?
Well, in order to make the mashup, you have to take some characters out. So,
There's only Elise can play Janine.
Oh, yeah.
No, she's no assistant.
But she can just be a more proactive one.
No.
Okay, Specs is.
Okay.
No.
No.
Tucker.
You're just going to say no. Okay, I thought you were just going to say no to anything I said.
Oh, how about this? How about this?
I'd be like, yo, Mark, any other character from Insidious, you'd be like, no.
She plays Bill Murray's love interest. She's the Sigourney Weaver.
I love it.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I can handle that.
And, I just want to see him fumbling around in the dark world or whatever.
The further.
That's right.
The containment further.
Like, and I like that they have to battle, like, you know, some of the ghosts and Ghostbusters are pretty cheeky, but I like them battling, like, pure evil.
Yeah. I just want to see what kind of quips, Venkman comes up with. You know? Like, we're not in Kansas anymore, boys.
Yeah. Or lack of quips.
Yeah. They're in the further. It's like, did someone forget to pay the electric bill? I don't know. Okay. All right. Okay. This next one is it's a little bit more
forced. You got all the mist around. It's like, can we get a dehumidifier?
And then Egon just spots off some sort of scientific stuff about this further is another dimension or whatever. Okay. The next one.
And then Ernie Hudson's like, whatever, guys.
Listen, just as long as we make it time for lunch. Okay, this next one's a little bit more force. But I'm going with the guys from Superbad, you know, McLovin, Michael Cera, Jonah Hill. And I want to mash them up with Saving Private Ryan. Like, I just want to see how those guys do in a war setting, right?
What about The Purge?
The Purge?
See them to survive The Purge?
Is it all them in one house and one of them's trying to kill one of the others of them?
I feel like they're going for a beer run, right? So they can lock themselves away safely for The Purge.
So it's almost more like the model of The Purge Anarchy.
Yeah, but they just want beer. And they're a bunch of idiots. But they get arrested, and they're like, listen, man, The Purge is going to start. And they're with Bill Hader and Seth Rogen, and then it's the three of them.
On the way to the prison when The Purge starts?
Yeah, and so then it's just all of them being chased around.
I think that's actually – I really want to see that movie.
Nice.
Or Windtalkers with Nick Cage. But just imagine. I don't know. Sorry to jump on your idea, Lash. You can talk about what you want. Sorry about that.
It's cool.
You can talk. I hate when people do that. You can talk now.
Oh, you have permission.
Okay. Thank you.
Mongo gives his permission.
Well, that does it for this episode of Movies, Films, and Flicks. Yeah. But Superbad, Saving Private Ryan, whatever. Like, it'd be cool to see those guys in in a stressful setting. You know,
I feel like Jonah Hill would get his arm shot off.
Yeah.
Right. And I just like to see him running around with it.
Poor Jonah Hill.
And I think McLovin would just fail his way up.
Yeah.
And become a major McLovin. You know what? The book Catch 22, where they make a guy named Major a major. So it's Major Major. They would turn McLovin into Major McLovin just as a joke. But then he'd actually be a major.
Yeah. So what's the movie called? Is it Saving Superbad?
Something like that. Saving Private McLovin.
The McLovin on River Kwai?
Yeah. Red McLovin.
You know, I don't know why this makes me think of it, but did you guys know that there's evidently a short film called The Neighbors 3, Zombies Rising?
Yeah, I saw that little clip.
It was a little promo. Right?
What's that?
It was a little promo thing that they did that, right?
He didn't want to kill his fraternity brother because he was a zombie.
I got to see that because that's just that's crossing a zombie movie with The Neighbors. Because Seth Rogen's in it too, right? Yep. A bunch of them are in it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just three people in a basement. It's 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
So I got a couple more, then we'll get going. I want the Out Cold crew to be in Cliffhanger. So the Out Cold crew have to battle John Lithgow.
Cliffhanger.
Then I want Dr. Doolittle to be in Deep Blue Sea.
So he's like talking to the sharks.
Yeah. What, it eats his arm?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm going to eat your arm. What? And then I want the Running Man in Rollerball, because I just want to see Arnold Schwarzenegger on roller skates.
Yeah.
Oh, that poor guy. He's going to go down. Especially back in his big days, when he falls and breaks a leg, they've got to call in like a large animal veterinarian.
Yeah, that's right. Like, it would just,
it's not a roller skate.
Wait, who is that? Who is this guy?
You just crossed Arnold Schwarzenegger with an alligator.
Yeah. I actually had another one here. This was probably like the most forced one. Oh, actually. Yeah. I want to mash up a Knight's Tale with the Fast and Furious.
Wait. Hold on. Now.
Do they joust each other from cars?
No, I like see like the Fast and Furious crew, like somehow they get teleported back in time and they end up in the medieval era with Heath Ledger's character, and they just somehow have to joust each other all the time.
That sounds amazing. And they have to take on the rakish Rufus Sewell.
Yeah. Like, I just want to see like Vin Diesel on the horse.
Oh gosh.
Like, well, I mean, Vin Diesel on a horse is one thing. Like, Vin Diesel, as big as he is, like, he's not as big as me.
Yeah.
But you know what though? I'd like to see him like you hear in a shop, you hear wah, 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 and he's like doing work on the horse.
Yeah.
He turns the horse into a 10-second horse.
Yeah. But here's another twist. They weren't the only ones to go back in time. The trucker from the first movie also gets blasted back in time too.
So then they have to battle the trucker. So Levin, good in case you didn't hear it, the trucker goes back in time.
Yeah.
Two from the first one.
Is he chasing them, kind of like in Time Cop?
No, he's being chased by them.
Yeah.
Still.
He's driving like this big like horse driven caravan or whatever, and they're trying to like jump on it or something.
And he just wipes them all out again.
Yeah. with what? With like a crossbow.
We just can't beat this guy.
Oh man, this guy's indestructible.
What is going on? I feel like if you put him in any movie, it'd be the most boring chase movie ever because the trucker would just win.
Yeah.
Well, now it was very exciting back then.
Yeah.
I think it'd be hilarious to see Tyrese and Ludacris just like in a medieval era.
Yeah, and like hanging out with Alan Tudyk.
Oh, yeah. And Paul Bettany.
Yeah, just chilling. I think they get along great.
Is it me or is Tyrese like... And Alan Tudyk, they're like the white and black counterparts of each other.
Yeah, they're always hungry.
Yeah.
They are. Yeah, they're always hungry. They're always complaining.
Yeah.
They never seem to have good ideas. Ooh. They always think they're going to fail.
And Brian would be jealous because, like, Tudyk and Tyrese would become best buds. And O'Connor would be like, yo, man.
And then he'd be like, yo, what's up, Shannon Sossaman?
Yeah. And then Dom would be like, hey, you got my sister.
And they'd be like, whatever, Dom, go get on your pony.
And then they're like, Dom, we got some ale for you. You got Corona? It's 1700.
Were they even breeding horses big enough back then for Dwayne Johnson to get on?
Yeah, Hob, the horse would ride Hobbs.
Yeah, he is the horse.
Give woman, it a piggyback ride.
Yeah.
Woman, I am the horse.
And like all the people in the past would just be watching him just like, why is he drinking his beer like that?
Yeah.
You mean out of a bottle?
Yeah, no,
that's weird.
He's just taking the grog from the cups and spilling it on his face. Like, why is he drinking so weird? Oh, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Michelle Rodriguez has amnesia.
Yeah.
Ugh. They're dancing to Bowie. I think it's great.
Yeah. I'd watch it. But yeah, that's it for me.
I love that one. That one wasn't forced at all.
Really?
No, that was organic.
Yeah, I guess. A Knight's Tale and Fast and Furious.
They go together like peas and oil.
Yeah, my favorite. Ooh. All right.
All right. Well, that takes us to question two. Yeah. It comes from F from Haddonfield, New Jersey, and she asks, Regarding torture porn as horror, in the old days, women were the likely perpetrators. For example, Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, and Die, Die, My Darling. But our modern twisted sadists or avengers are male, Misery being an exception. Social feminist statement? Now, I just want to open by saying, I don't really agree with this observation.
Nope. But I get it.
It's interesting that the three, before we even get into actually answering, these three movies that she brought up are all specifically from the 60s, the early 60s. Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte is 1964, about an aging reclusive Southern belle plagued by a horrifying family secret, and she descends into madness when a lost relative arrives.
Wait, isn't that when she drops the stuff on the people and kills them at the end because they're trying to get her land because they want to build a highway?
I don't remember.
Yeah, and they're torturing her.
In Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, 1962, a former child star torments her paraplegic sister in their decaying mansion. Die, Die, My Darling is 1965. A young woman is terrorized by her deceased fiancé's demented mother, who blames her for her son's death. Now, all of these movies aren't even, for their era, what I would call torture porn. These are psychological torture.
Yeah, because in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, the woman who was paralyzed was the one who tried to hit her sister with the car because she was more talented of an actress. Like, she was more of a child star. So then they became recluses later when they were rich. So, yeah, it's like psychological family stuff. It's not like,
yeah, not just that. Yeah, there were also family relationships. And yeah, torture porn is almost never family relationships and is almost always, well, physical, like visceral. It's about the harm that is physically caused.
So, you know, you're right. You know what I think is a good counterpoint to these ones in the 60s with a female is Inside.
Oh, yeah, yeah, where the woman is the French horror movie, right?
The So the twisted sadists or Avengers are female. It's Inside's about a French film, I believe, about this woman who is pregnant and she's harassed by this other woman. And then it becomes this insane.
Oh, it gets nuts. There's like blood everywhere.
So basically, the woman got into a car accident and her boyfriend died, but the car they hit was the woman who came back. And so this woman was pregnant, lost her baby. So instead she takes the other woman's baby and there's like a cut open belly. There's a C-section. I mean, that's torture porn, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like that. And then there's like the I Spit on Your Grave movies and there's four of those.
Yeah. And then where the woman comes back, right?
Right, yeah. Now, initially she's the victim and it's brutal and longstanding, but her revenge takes up more of the movie than her victimization. And man, there's some horrible stuff in that. Now, well, on both ends, I guess.
And then there's high tension, right?
Right.
Which is that. And then there's the loved ones. I don't know if you saw the loved ones.
I didn't see that.
Oh my gosh. It's about this kid oh my gosh. Oh gosh.
Well, you know, and she said Misery was the exception, but in a way, most of the movie Carrie was the abusive psychological relationship of the mother over the child until the very end when there was a finale of her powers.
Yeah.
And then in Hush 1998, Jessica Lange was a mother-in-law, and Gwyneth Paltrow, like, she slowly psychologically tortured her. Like, so I'm not going to call it a bad or wrong observation, but I feel like the observation was more geared towards family relationships, and I couldn't think of a lot of them.
Frontiers, there's a family, but it's not, they just capture like robbers,
right? And they were just physically torturing and tearing apart people outside of their family. Yeah, so this is a weird question because we're touching on like a lot of aspects of extremism in it. I guess someone would have to write a scholarly article and do a lot of digging to find like a real breaks and trends in this, but do I think that there's a difference in social feminist statement? No, I don't.
Yeah. Guys, you got to see The Loved Ones.
Lazavath, what was your take on this?
I don't like this question. It's too serious.
It's too serious.
Seriously.
It's hard to tell happy-go-lucky jokes about Vin Diesel and Dwayne Johnson piggybacking a horse.
Okay. Social feminist statement. No, no. It's just, I don't know, torture porn just, it just, there's no underlying agenda. Like, they're just trying to gross you out. Like, they're just trying to, like, it's just a cash grab by, like, showing you, like, really extreme stuff. If you think, like, there's, like, an underlying meaning behind that, I feel like you're just kind of grasping at straws there. Like, I'll watch, like, Green Inferno. I'm like, I'm not trying to find, like, a deeper meaning in that movie. Like, I'm just, like, it's an Eli Roth, like, gore fest. Like, what's there to take from it? Like, it's just gross, you know?
Yeah, he said that was about slacktivists, but that's not true.
No, it was just torture porn. It's what it is. Like, it's, I don't know. Sometimes cigar is just a cigar. Like, that's my answer.
Now, can I ask you guys another question to offshoot this? People say Saw kind of jump-started the torture porn, but I feel like Final Destination is like the battery in the car. Like, they didn't start it up yet.
Yeah.
But basically, Final Destination movies are about people getting murdered in creative ways.
Yeah.
Like, the whole setup is to murder people. Like, is that torture porn?
Wait, when did Hostel come out? Because I always thought that was kind of the beginning.
It came out after Saw.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Okay. So it was like Final Destination. Saw was 2004 or 5.
Yeah.
Because my buddy Johnny Party and I saw it in the theaters, and I was in Tallahassee. Yeah. and then it was like Ruins, Turistas, Human Centipede, Hostel 2.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess maybe Saw just kind of was the one that just like really kind of crossed the line in terms of how graphic you can make torture porn really. So it's not the most graphic torture porn movie out there, but it was just kind of one of the first to really kind of try to cross that line.
Well, yeah. It sensationalized the act.
Yes. Yes. So,
like, even when he cuts off his leg, you don't see that much of it. You just hear him like going, oh. And then Tucker Specs is in there with him. I don't know which one is Tucker or Specs.
Specs is the one with the glasses.
Oh, well, then that's... Oh, shit.
Yo, did you just have a revelation?
I'm just going to use my PG-13 right here. Motherfucker. There
you go. I think that's the...
Oh, gosh.
I think that's the answer to that question.
Tucker and Specs.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just giving a random example, but Hard Candy 2, going back to...
Oh!
Jesus, man, that movie.
Hard Candy 2005 with a young Ellen Page torturing Patrick Wilson. That was an intense one.
Yeah. Did I see that with you, Lazbath?
Might have. I definitely remember seeing it at theaters. I just remember, like, that scene where she pretended to castrate Patrick Wilson. Like,
oh my God. Like, that was so terrible.
Okay, like, she didn't do it. Like, spoiler alert.
When he was begging, still. Like, I was begging with him.
Yeah. Yep. I was like, don't. Oh, man. Yeah, that. I've only seen that movie once. It's a good movie. I just can't watch it again.
And Larry Crown, that's torture porn.
Yeah.
That's torture corn.
Yeah. Ugh. Oh, God. I like that. Nice. Oh, good. I think I saw that with you, Lazbath. And then we went and had some Coors Lights.
Yeah. You guys watched some very lousy movies together.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of the Coors Light.
That's right.
Get the bad taste out of our mouths.
With more bad taste?
Yeah. Hey. Don't talk crap about Coors Light.
Oh, wait. I thought you said we drank Coors Lights, and then to get the bad taste for our mouths, we watched a movie.
You know what? I think we drank Coors Light before and after.
Yeah, you're right.
Times. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Levin, what's our next question?
All right. Next question comes from Buddy from Clementon, New Jersey, and he asks, on a personal level, what still makes the MFF or Movies, Films, and Flicks crew cringe? I'm not talking jump scares. I mean lean back, shut one eye, bite your finger, and cringe. Example, for me, Last House on the Left. We all know what I'm talking about.
Hmm. All right, so for me, I was trying to think of horror things that made me cringe. And this is going to sound weird, but then I started thinking about, like, cringe comedy, right? And then I started thinking about that scene from Swingers where he leaves all those voicemails.
Oh my God!
On that woman's phone. And so for me, I'm serious. Like, if there's like a movie where my wife and I were talking about this, where like you like a guy and he's talking to his crush, and like she like blows him off, you're like, ah, like. But there's a scene in Swingers where this guy gets this woman's number. He's supposed to wait 2 days to call her, but instead he goes home and leaves like 7 voice messages, and then she tells him to never call. But it's this really long scene, and when you're watching it, if you don't lean back and like turn your ears or like walk away, it's not frightening, but it's just so cringeworthy because you're like, don't do it.
When you say that, you make me think of the hair waxing scene in 40-Year-Old Virgin,
or like in Bridesmaids when they're trying to one up each other during the speech, and like you just feel so bad for Kristen Wiig, or yeah, like when like. Rose Byrne's doing all those things. Like, I don't know. I guess that's where I went because there are some horror movies, but I don't really.
Bridesmaids when they're trying on the dresses after they have the curry.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, or like The Office, the British Office. All right. The American Office is garbage, people. I'm telling you. I like the first couple seasons, but it's not good. Don't hate me. I'm a British guy. But,
no, you're not.
I love the British Office. Like, I think it's pure brilliance.
Yeah.
And then, like, the in-betweeners, that kind of humor, that always makes me cringe. But then I thought of one horror movie moment, and it's the poop scene from Human Centipede.
Oh,
I was doing Bad Movie Tuesday with a bunch of my friends. Oh, so it was my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time. My buddy Jay, VJ, and Neil, we're all watching it. You know, we're all cheap winding it up, bad movies, you know. And that scene, so there's these three people and they're tied to each other, kind of like, you know, there's a lead and then there's a woman attached to the guy's mouth is attached to the guy's butt. And then another woman is attached to the other woman's butt. And there's a scene where the guy poops into the woman's mouth.
If people know the movie we're talking about, you don't really need to explain
like,
it.
Something just came up my throat when I was saying it. Like, I really got like pukey.
It's like, ugh.
Like, oh God, I'm feeling it. You guys gotta talk, man, because I'm like,
yeah,
and like but the guy's face when he did it, he's like, uh-oh. And then the girl's like, no, she couldn't talk obviously, but then it just goes right into her.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Oh jeez.
Oh gosh,
I could just taste it now.
I'm dizzy. Not someone that, do
that,
something
not that that ever happens to me. Okay, let me get you might appreciate mine. I know you're a big fan of his, but in the Ryan Reynolds movie Just Friends, there's a scene where he just had like a date with like Amy Smart, who was like his lifelong crush. Like he was like a fat kid growing up, so he was like in the friend zone. But now he's like older, grown up, successful, slimmer, svelte. He's basically Timothy Oliphant.
Triple S. Successful, slim, svelte.
Yeah. But yeah, like the date didn't really go all that well. I can't remember the specific details, but like he's just sitting in the car and like he's just like freaking out and just like yelling like all these things, like these really personal things. Then like Amy Smart just like slowly walks up to the car because I think like she forgot something, was just trying to tell him something, but she was just like watching him just like freak out in the car like the whole time. It's like it's hilarious, but it's also so cringy. I'm just like, oh, just. Turn around. And then Ryan Reynolds finally does. And then, like, the look on his face is just like, oh. It's like, I like Just Friends. Like, the movie's not that great, but, like, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. But, like, that one scene, like, it was just, like, it was easily the best scene in that movie. It was very, very cringy, but also very, very funny.
Is Chris Klein in Just Friends?
Yeah.
Yep.
So is Anna Faris.
Oh, she was funny in that, from what I remember.
Yeah. No, it's honestly, even if you don't want to watch the movie, just YouTube like that one scene.
It's a delightful movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie to watch. Like, I don't think it's ever on TV. I don't know why. Like, it's a perfect TV movie. You know, I don't know, but
I agree.
But yeah, that's my movie cringe moment. Mark, it's funny you mentioned the U.S. Office because like my all time favorite like cringe worthy moment. It's the Scott's Tots episode.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, gosh.
Jeez. I'm not going to go in detail about it, but it was just like, I can't watch that episode. Like, if I'm flipping, like, through the TV channels and I see, like, that episode's on, I'm just like, nope. I'm just like, there's no way. But, yeah, those are my most cringeworthy moments. They're not, I don't know. I don't really get too cringed out horror movies these days. I don't know. Yeah.
I came up with three categories of cringes. Okay. Like, one of them we kind of barely skimmed on in the last question with I Spit on Your Grave and Hard Candy, the castration scene. I Spit on Your Grave, there's genital mutilation. Like, that stuff, scenes that even imply genital mutilation, anything in the Lars von Trier movie, Antichrist, for God's sakes. Like, that stuff should get almost anybody cringing. Like, those are brutal. They're anti-humanistic.
Yeah, I Saw the Devil. That'll do it, too.
And, like, there's that. There's, for me, and Mark, too, and we've discussed this in a few episodes in bits and pieces, really brutal limb breaks. Like, the Insidious 3 crunchy legs, the hand crush in Hush.
Oh, yeah.
And, the UFC, Silva Weidman leg tibia break.
Oh, yeah, when, his, when he goes in, oh, gosh. Jeez. But you know what, like, during the crunchy leg scene, I was raising the roof, though. I was like, ah!
Do it,
but
do
I
it.
Mean, but I was, like, I was laughing, but I was literally physically recoiling like a dying spider. Like, my limbs were coming in, I couldn't control it. Like, I was falling apart. and so there's those, and then for me, it's... it's needles. And that's some people have a needle phobia. I'm kind of one of those people. I'm currently like 260 pounds and I have difficulty getting a flu shot. I'll pass out if you take a tiny vial of blood. And so, like, to give a weird, like, two polar opposites, in Saw 2, when the woman is pushed into the pit of syringes.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that with my cousin Ryan, and he's the same way. And we fell apart at that. We just kept saying, oh, she's moving around in there and pulling out the knee. Like, we, to us, that was the scariest thing in the whole Saw series. And then on the other end, like, I was a Smallville fan, right? Tom Welling, Superman. And there was a scene, and I think it was season one or season two, where he had to give blood for a sports physical. And so he has to hold a piece of kryptonite and they take some blood. I couldn't watch that. I'm watching like a G-rated family-friendly superhero, like, squeaky clean guy, and I was falling apart of him giving blood. So, like, those are like my, like, three levels of of like wincing, cringing.
You know what I hate in movies? Whenever they like need some blood, they're like, quick, I need your blood. They always slice open like a 6-inch gash on someone's thumb. It's like,
you know why they do that? They do that because of the Thing.
Yeah. And it's like, guys, you don't have to slice your whole arm open to give for a couple drops of blood. Just like that.
Just poke your finger. Like,
yeah, punch me in the nose.
Why does it fit? You kidding me? Like, my calf can take it. Like, just slice the skin of my calf. It doesn't even have to go to the muscle.
You wouldn't even feel it.
I wouldn't have to limp or anything. You slice my thumb? Out in an Antarctic... what? I'm going to get some weird infection.
Yeah, and people, like, cut their hands, too, like, across their front of their palms. And you're like, why'd you have to do a 4-inch gash?
you know, we're talking about, like, cuts here and, like... I didn't know where or not to include it because I felt like it was cheating. But, like, do you guys remember, like, the paper cut scenes in Jackass?
The movie? Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm not good with paper cut. Itty-bitty cuts, I'm not good with.
Yeah, that's definitely cringy. But it's Jackass, so it's, like, the whole point is to be cringy. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cheating. So I don't know.
Yeah, or any scene from Larry Crown.
Yeah. Whew, man.
Torture corn.
Yeah.
All right, guys. It's time to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Hey, guys. I got a question for you.
Okay.
What's your favorite shark? Kyle?
Mako.
Oh, nice. John?
Street, tiger. Right?
Okay. Ooh, mine's San Jose.
Okay.
So now, why are we talking about sharks?
Well, you said San Jose. That's like where they're, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Why are we talking about sharks?
Oh, we do a podcast.
Right. It's a different one than Word of the Bay.
We talk improv, right?
Okay. Walks. Yeah, we talk about that. We talk about a lot of stuff. Just kind of our daily lives and just,
video,
you know,
games.
Movies. And
they all involve sharks in some way.
Yeah, most of the time.
This has gone terribly.
Well, away.
Away? Wait, explain to me what away means, please.
Away?
It's like kind of like a no way, but an okay way.
Okay, where can we find the podcast?
Okay, way.
Sharkdropper.com.
Sweet.
Okay. See it.
Flicks, during the break, I made sure to avoid all the edges on all the sheets of paper in the movies, films, and flicks vault here. I feel like one small slip and I'm dead from like a million paper cuts.
You're done.
Yeah.
You ever get a paper cut like on the webbing of the edge of your hand between your thumb and your index finger?
Yes.
It's all and over. So like when you open your hand, when you just open your hand to high five, it like stretches it out and it keeps opening it up again.
Ah, and it's just like even if you put like a Band-Aid on it, like it's still going to stretch. Like it's never going to. You're but just like, it's never going to heal, ever.
A paper cut right there will slowly kill any 1980s fraternity bro who's used to high-fiving.
Oh. Yeah, he's got bloods everywhere.
Like, he can't stop. Like, no. All right. Lemon Good, I think you got some more listener questions for us, right?
Well, all right. This next question comes from Ryan from Lake Alfred, Florida. And he says, if Ant-Man maintains the same density when he changes size, wouldn't a light breeze have just sailed him away when he enlarged himself in Civil War?
So in honor of Ryan, I researched this a lot, right? And my eyes started slowly crossing. And then I just went, oh, my God.
There's a lot wrong with Ant. Like, the physics are all over the place, right, in Ant-Man. Like, there's no continuity. Because in the beginning, when he's small and he falls from the bathtub, he cracks the tile floor. But then an ant can fly him around, which shouldn't work. Like, he would smush. He would have sat on Antony and knocked his head off.
Yeah.
Well, you know what else? If he had punched with the same total amount of force at an ant size, but with that small surface area hitting you, it would be like a bullet shooting you in the face, but stopping a millimeter deep. But it would be creating little punctures in you.
And Michael Douglas, Hank Pym, has a tank in his pocket. That density's still there.
Well, so in the movie, now even though it's total nonsense because of the Pym particle, but they just yada yada it.
Yeah, I found something in here though that explains it.
Okay.
Do you mind if I read it?
Go for
Can
it.
I ask what the source is and if they're specifying comic or movie is the connection?
It's in the movie Cura. How did Ant-Man's strength increase when he grew in Captain America: Civil War? But then it led to a whole discussion about the weight of him. And then I also read, I watched a video, a 13-minute video about the first Ant-Man. Like, shoot, I forget the name of it, but it's 13 about the physics of Ant-Man, saying that Ant-Man's the most powerful hero. So I spent a lot of time researching this. But on this thing it said, as far as I understand it, Pym particles decrease the space between atoms when shrinking and also displace some mass into the microverse. When used to grow, it pulls mass and virtual particles, presumably from some kind of macroverse. I don't know, magic. However, yeah, these particles and additional mass are unstable and can only remain for a relatively short period of time. In addition, it heavily stresses the lucky giant. Now, using a faked approximation, let's assume that Scott is 10 times as tall, roughly 60 feet. Using cartoon physics, he's now times 1,000 as strong and heavy. So a rough guess is he weighs around 100 tons and can lift around the same amount. So they're saying in the movie he gets particles from the macroverse, and that's how he's able to bend the airplane.
They actually cited something very incorrectly, though. When you are 10 times as big, you weigh 1,000 times as much but are only 100 times as strong.
But he said cartoon physics.
Yeah, there's a difference, Loving Good.
Yeah, like he's like use a faked approximation. Like this, he's not saying any of this is gospel. He's just saying like let's see what's happened here.
Yeah.
So, like he's just using cartoon physics along with he also said I don't know magic next to the macroverse. So this is kind of but they do talk about the macroverse. But he obviously is heavy because he's not floating away like a Macy's Day Parade balloon.
Right.
Right.
And you know when that tank came out of that house, it smashed through a window and crushed a cop car, even though it would float away, Thomas the Tank. And that ant would weigh next to nothing and float away too, and it ran away like a giant dog. Yeah. So they must be pulling energy from some
Macroverse.
What is the Macroverse?
Oh my.
What? Is a mass teleportation event of particulate matter occurring?
I mean, he also caused like a black hole to go into, like, he went tiny and like went through this whole other dimension. Yeah. So I mean, there's something funky going on here.
I think it's going to get explained in Ant-Man 2, I think.
Yeah. Right?
Cuz I think Hank Pym's wife, what's it, the Wasp, she's going to make an appearance in the second one, I read.
Ooh.
So, and that's where she got lost in the microverse. So I think the micro macroverse will be explored further. See what I did there? In Ant-Man 2, right? Yeah. It's not going to make any sense at all, like, but like it'll be entertaining.
They should just yada yada it like the like Looper when Bruce Willis explains time travel.
Oh, yeah. Listen, you don't want to hear me explain it. Like, he could have been like, what if I get big? Won't I float away? Then Michael Douglas can be like,
No.
And then go, let me explain it to you. And then the next scene, they're back at Baskin Robbins eating ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
What do you guys think?
Well, yeah, I think Baskin that Robbins even. Even with their cartoon physics, it's nonsense because they do accept the fact that he gets proportionately stronger when he gets smaller. So you would have to accept the physics that as you get bigger, you get weaker.
But that doesn't happen.
Because the movie's wrong and the writers are fools and people who write comic books aren't scientists.
Well, yeah.
but that's – Ryan is asking a science-y question. He's not asking as a fan of the movie.
I just think that they were just like, I think that maybe came up. They're smart people. And they're like, listen, if this happens, he's going to float away. Yeah. Then some guy went,
make it happen.
Maybe there's like a guy who's like, who's
sold
job. He just
said he doesn't.
Yeah.
Sorry, Laz.
That's right. Well, you know, the Macy's Day Parade, like they had like those people like guiding the balloons with the strings, right? Like maybe there's a guy whose sole job is to keep Ant-Man down.
Yeah.
Like, he has, like, a string. He's, like, always to the side, you know? He's like, oh, he's getting big again. Get ready.
So yeah. he has, like, an Alfred that's there holding him down.
Yeah, he never gets mentioned, conveniently.
Wait, so I have a question about these Pym particles and the micro and macroverse, and it's not a negative critical question. It's if you can pull particulate matter from the surrounding micro or macroverse or whatever they are, right, magic, then why don't you pull them in to increase the Pym density or whatever of him at regular size so that he's basically Superman?
Because that wouldn't look cool.
Yeah.
Superman is cool when he hits someone as a human size and they get launched. Spider-Man too.
It's cute. Ant-Man. You know what? I was just thinking about this the other day, and when I see Iron Man movies, I want Tony out of the suit, right? But when I watch Ant-Man, I want to see Ant-Man.
Hmm. Yeah.
Do you? Because I just wanted to see Paul Rudd talking about Ant-Man.
No, I mean Paul Rudd's great, but I like the little Ant-Man stuff where he's running through drains, and he's riding on sea turtles, and he's talking to geese. And he's running around the wheel, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's running past Anthony Mackie going, on the left! And Anthony Mackie's like, who's running past me? You know? Like, I just want a little Ant-Man.
Who's that your Anthony hat?
I want a little Ant-Man reading National Geographic. I want a little Ant-Man eating an ice cream cone. A tiny ice cream cone. It's just adorable. Hmm. I want him riding micro machines. I want them to fix up a micro machine. And Ant-Man can drive it. Like, that's what I want.
Nice.
I mean, none of it makes sense.
I think,
right?
It's very fair. None of it makes sense.
But, like, Anthony would have gotten his head ripped off. If Ant-Man falls and breaks tile, he can't sit on Anthony's head.
Yeah.
Nope. Definitely can't.
Like, Anthony is smushed. And when he stood on Michael Pena's shoulder, Michael Pena would have had a 200-pound little blob on him.
No, it would have been 200 pounds occupying the space the size of a needlehead,
yeah.
And it would have sliced through his body.
Yeah, he would have ripped him up.
Yeah.
But you know what? Didn't happen.
yada yada yada.
You know what? I think it's time to move on to the next question before we get
Urban
sucked,
sombrero.
Sucked
Wait, have we exhausted all of our non-science theories?
I just don't want to get sucked further into this microverse here.
Yeah. I want to see Ant-Man get sucked into a vacuum cleaner.
Like, and the vacuum cleaner would explode because of the impact of his density or whatever.
I want to see him fight a character called the Dirt Devil.
That would actually be adorable.
Yeah.
It's like a dust mite.
Like, I want to hang out with Ant-Man. I don't want to hang out with Paul Rudd.
Yeah. But Paul Rudd Ant-Man.
No, I don't want him sitting around my house drinking my beer. I want to chill with the little Ant-Man.
Do you think that Ant-Man can drink like a 12-pack when he's 2 millimeters tall?
I'm not letting it. He better buy it. I want Ant-Man to make me tiny, like little wooden houses. You know what I mean?
Dude, the construction cost would be very low.
Exactly. You know how cute that would be?
Next question, right. Levengood. Next question.
Ryan, you're welcome for that walk down non-science lane.
Well, if you use science, it just wouldn't work.
Exactly. I think that was his point.
Yeah.
So it was fun to discuss.
I bet he's sitting there rubbing his hands together going, yeah.
Oh, I've started to introduce science into the Movies, Films, and Flicks website. All right. Next question comes from Jesse from Camden County, New Jersey, and he asks, what was the best female-to-male or vice versa role reversal? Now, I didn't get that, so he gave me a for example, and he said, like Evil Dead and the Evil Dead remake or the next Karate Kid.
I like Judi Dench when she became M.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
But then a lot of people were like, she became a maternal figure. And it's like, well, he never had parents. Like, there are father figures in a lot of these movies. Like, there are mentors. Like, you know, Michael Douglas is going to become like a father figure to little Paul Rudd eating tiny Baskin Robbins. Like, you know, like, I liked her in it. I thought she was good. And I don't think she was like, she wasn't like trying to play, like, Judi Dench was Judi Dench. She didn't try to like be anything else,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I thought she fit in really well. And then I tried to think of more, but I, like a Mary Elizabeth Winstead in the Thing reboot?
No.
Prequel?
Oh, yeah, that's right, because she basically took the MacReady character, but with an advanced science degree.
You know, less facial hair and no sombrero. Yeah.
Considerably less facial hair. That was a wise call.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, what about you guys?
For me, I had mentioned this in a past episode. It might have been recent, in fact. But for me, it was a script reversal because Ripley in Alien was written for a man.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't change any of the script. They kept all the script the same. Originally, they were going to rewrite it. And Sigourney Weaver pushed that she liked it just the way it was and wanted to act it the way it was. And so they left it. And as a result, you ended up with this character who was really iconic. And it was a strong, feminist-friendly or worldly-friendly character, right? She had her role on the ship. She had her level of seniority. And then, of course, when they wrote her character for the sequels, part two, all of a sudden, she's not taken seriously. She's a maternal figure for Ripley. Part three, she's a sex object for rape and need of protection from men. And part four, she's even as a clone, like, construct, like,
basketball
science
player.
Project. Yeah, basketball player. Even in that, like, she was a maternal figure trying to protect her weird alien hybrid clone thing.
Yeah, she was cuddling with aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so it was, you know, once people knew that they were writing for a woman, it radically changed all these other Alien movies. But when it was written for a man and she took it, she owned it. And the only thing that they changed that made, you know, that was very womanly was that scene towards the end where she's in her panties and her little shirt, you know, the alien is in the escape pod thing or whatever. But, I mean, I thought that was actually that was before its time, no? I mean, that kind of a role.
When did – oh, yeah, because Terminator wasn't even at that point yet because Linda Hamilton's character changed from 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Let's see. Like, Wait Until Dark. That was with the blind Audrey Hepburn, but she still wasn't that. Yeah, that was kind of a newer. Well, what about, like, Network in those kind of movies? But they weren't written as males.
What's Network?
With
Nashville. Network was. Network.
With, wait, what William was Hurt, Network? Right? Yeah, with William Hurt, right?
That was 76, right?
Yeah, Network.
Or Nashville. I don't know. I'm just talking about movies. I think you're right about that. That was like a good thing. And also Hamilton and Terminator 2. I was trying to think as characters that are normally men. Mm. I thought Emily Blunt was really good in Edge of Tomorrow.
Right.
But she was.
Oh, my God. Emily Blunt just made me think of it. I don't know if this was intentional, and it's not necessarily going with theme, but when they cast the – I can't think of the actress's name, but when they cast the Vasquez character in Aliens,
yeah,
she played a woman in a very masculine role in Aliens.
Hmm. Yeah.
Not that – but again, that wasn't the role reversal thing, really. I'm kind of going off the cuff. You did a good job thinking of these, Mark. I did not. I had trouble coming up with these examples.
Well, I'm a huge Bond fan. I just think Judi Dench was great in anything.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. What, Laz, did you come up with any?
Oh, yeah. I came up with one. Like, it's male or female. I thought, like, it couldn't be done. But, like, I think they did a pretty good job. I think when Adrian Brody and Topher Grace did the... were part of the cast of Predators. Like, I didn't think they'd be man enough to head like a Predator movie, but I think they did okay.
Oh, so. Oh, Adrian Brody.
Yeah.
My favorite line from, I think it was episode 3 when I was absent and you guys were discussing the Alien movies, was when Mark did his impression of Adrian Brody. He's like, I don't know where these predators are. Like, I couldn't
get close. The predators are coming.
He's like, I have biceps and pecs now, so I need to talk like this.
But no, seriously, in all seriousness, like, I know I'm poking fun, but like, you went from like Schwarzenegger, Ventura, Wetters to like Topher Grace and Agent Brody. I mean, granted, like Danny Trejo and Lawrence Fishburne, they're like, those are definitely like manly men, but like, come on. And it's just like, oh, I don't know. It was like a big gap, is what I'm saying.
So, yeah, that's fair.
But, that's yeah, I think fair. They did pretty... It wasn't like a great movie, but I enjoyed it better than Predator 2. So, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
See, yeah, and then Topher Grace, but I knew he was a bad guy the whole time.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah. Because they were all bad guys.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah,
like, I was like, he's a killer. And then at the end, he became the killer, and I'm like, I knew it.
I was actually buying that maybe he really was just there as the medic, but maybe he was a criminal in the sense of, like, malpractice or something. Like, I was kind of viewing it like that, where he really was put there as a medic, but he really was a wrongdoer somehow.
Dr. Giggles.
That was a great movie, Ryan, and I love that. Ryan, the question asker, and I like that movie.
Maniac.
Nice. Oh, man. Have we gotten all of our male-female crossover answers out?
Yeah. Was White Chicks too obvious an answer?
Oh, gosh.
Well, Elizabeth, I'll allow it.
Okay.
You know who I wish would have had a female-to-female swap? Would have been Keira Knightley and King Arthur, because there's a scene where she's been in a rock prison for 10 years and then they lift the rock off of her and she comes out with perfect eyebrows.
I think maybe it's like there's a mirror down there or something. She just plucks them. She plucks them like every day.
It's like dog breeds though, like generation after generation they selected for women with thinner eyebrows, and that's just how she looks now.
Listen, if you guys got me out of a rock prison that I've been stuck in for 10 years and they're like, all right, let's go into battle.
Yeah.
I'd be like, guys, I can't even walk. I was like, I have no leg. Guys, I have no leg muscles.
No, here's a sword. Go.
I literally have no muscles in my body. Listen. I'm going to need rehabilitation.
No, but that, no time. But
a rehabilitated Keira Knightley has literally no muscles.
Yep. So, I mean, yeah. But, I think... You know, it's kind of fun, though. I think we're coming to a day and age where we can do kind of role swaps like this. Like, I know Sandra Bullock swapped a role with George Clooney in Our Brand is Crisis. I didn't watch that. You got the Ghostbusters movie. You had the Ocean's 11 movie that or Ocean's 8 that exists in the same world where Sandra Bullock is like the sister of George Clooney. They're doing an Ocean's 8 movie where Sandra Bullock is the sister of George Clooney, something like that. Huh. And she puts together a crew to do a heist.
You know, there's also talk of like them doing like a female Expendables movie. I don't know if that ever came to anything.
Yeah, the Expendables.
Ah.
You know, they actually they sort of already did that, and it was a movie called Mercenaries, and it was utterly just terrible. And Brigitte Nielsen was the villain, and it had like Zoe Bell and Vivica A. Fox and
Christiana Loken.
Christiana Loken, right? She was in it, and Cynthia Rothrock was in it. The 80s martial arts movie.
So the majority of women that have been I'm not going to say it.
Right. So it had these women. It was a team of four managed by Cynthia. So they did this. It was a 2014 movie. I saw it on Netflix, regrettably, last month with my friend Matt in Florida. And oh my God, it was terrible. But they were clearly trying to be the Expendables. Like, they were all these criminal people who were broken out for this job to team up kind of thing.
is that your review?
Yes. That's the whole thing. Like, you know, normally Mark and I love writing bad reviews, right? Because there's Bad Movie Tuesday that Mark started ages ago. And but no, like this one, like I was hurting too much. I was too busy licking my wounds to do keystrokes on the computer. It's terrible.
Ugh. Yeah.
I remember one of those actresses, I was doing a Comic-Con, and I used to be really overworked because we didn't have that many people. So we had thousands of people in the show, and one of the actresses wanted some lunch. So I found like a coupon. That's the best I could do because I had to run the entire floor and train all the volunteers and get them going. And I brought it to one of the actresses. I'm like, hey, this is the best I can do. And they looked at me and they go, thanks,
ooh,
Mark.
Wow.
Like that. And like, I didn't have to do any of it. That wasn't my job because I had 100 volunteers and thousands of people on the show floor. And I just tried to help. And thanks, Mark.
So did you like hand her a Twinkie?
Give her a Blu-ray copy of Larry Crown.
Yeah. She cringed a whole weekend.
Oh, thanks. I've been meaning to watch this. Oh, yeah, I got you now.
Yeah. let me know how it is. Thanks, Mark.
Oh, brother.
Wait, but what was the lunch?
Well, it was a coupon to go get a lunch.
Oh,
so you didn't actually hand her a lunch.
No, but it's just as good. But I couldn't have done anything else because that wasn't my job.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't even have been there. I was pulling with Dave.
You went above and beyond.
Yeah, I did.
By getting her that coupon.
And beyond.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. That was a bad flashback.
Here's your coupon. /voucher.
I'm guessing that was Christiana Loken. But you don't have to say
who. I'm not saying nothing.
All right. So our last question comes from Jen the Mobes from Richland, Washington. And she asks, and I think she was just being snarky here. She says, Van Damme and Arnold look awful. Why don't male action stars have good plastic surgeons?
I mean, has there ever been a man with a good plastic surgeon?
Sylvester Stallone.
No.
Well, maybe he hoards him. Maybe Arnold's like, hey, Sly, let me get your guy. And so, I'll introduce you to my guy. And it's another guy.
Well, here's the thing. If you have a good plastic surgeon, no one would know, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the whole point. So, yeah, I don't know.
I read online that plastic surgeons were split as to whether Arnold had it or not. And I just felt dirty about reading about Arnold or plastic surgery. But then I felt dirty just reading about Arnold Schwarzenegger and plastic surgery.
That must have been an interesting article.
a lot of people, though, like if you're an actor or even just my neighbor or something who gets a facelift, it's not like you go get one facelift and you're done with plastic surgery. It's like you get a facelift and then it's almost like, you know, getting a car detailed. You know, you go back 6 or 12 months later, you get a touch up. You know, the eyes are running a little more than this. You know, a year later, you get the eyes and a little trick around the lips. And like they're doing this stuff very regularly. If they're doing it typically. So, I mean, maybe not your eyes. That doesn't have to be done that often. But, like, you know, like Sly has consistently not aged. Like, if anything, he looks about as good now as he did 15 years ago. Like, that dude, he either, like, got bitten by Lestat. Yeah. Or he has had a very close relationship with his plastic surgeon.
What if he just likes pomegranates?
You know who hasn't?
That's
aged?
What he sips in the waiting room of his plastic surgery.
Wait, is this? Can we say allegedly before all this?
Yeah, allegedly to everything.
It's all everything allegedly.
Yeah, but
that's
our
disclaimer. Everything allegedly.
You know who hasn't aged a day? And like, I don't know if he has a plastic surgeon. I don't want to believe it, but like Keanu Reeves, like he just looks kind of the same.
Like, yeah. You know, and the thing is that, like, if you look closely, though, you can see little bits of his age. So he has consistently gotten older, but at a much slower rate than most humans.
Well, the thing is, like, you watch his last movie, he did the John Wick, right? And is that the name? Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Wick. Like, he looks a little bit older, but, like, only by, like, handful of years. But, like, you can tell, like, he's older because he kind of moves slower. He's not, like,
See,
agile, but like
Keanu is interstellar aging. Yeah. The world ages 56 years, and he comes back 18 months older.
Oh yeah, is that a side effect from his Bill and Ted days?
Oh, from the time travel, and then you got Sly Stallone, who was cryogenically frozen in Demolition Man. Maybe I just explained him.
Oh, yeah.
And Arnold could have clones, like in Sixth Man. Wait, that's a basketball movie with Marlon Wayans.
Judge Dredd had clones of Sly's twin.
Or what about the Sixth Day?
Ugh. Yeah.
Oh right, yeah, there were twins in that. But of course, I mean, I think Arnold has aged normally. By the way, that's kind of my standpoint.
Yeah.
Arnold, what do you think?
I mean, I think he looks like an aging Arnold.
The dude's like 70.
You know, but here's the thing. Like, we're talking about male stars here. Like, I feel like males have it a little bit easier compared to women. Like, we're not necessarily judged on looks, especially as we get older. Like, you know, when guys get older, like, they get, you know, distinguished. But female stars, when they get older, careful
with what you're about to say. Think
they get cast in like these roles where they play older ladies, right?
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Okay. Yeah,
because like you know what, like how old was Stallone when he made Expendables 3? You know,
yeah, exactly. And Diane Lane is playing Superman's mom now. And it's like what?
I mean, she's still a gorgeous woman, but she's not playing like a love interest these days, right?
And they're like
not too much.
They like stuffed her in mom jeans. I'm like, don't do that to Diane Lane.
No,
dude, Diane Lane, she still has a little bit of my heart. So
yeah, no, like that's why when I was like, don't gray her up. Come on, guys.
Yeah,
and yeah, but like I saw an article. It's like the older male stars get older, but their love interests don't.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like this weird like a double standard like gender gap thing in Hollywood. Which has always existed.
Yeah, Susan Sarandon just played Melissa McCarthy's grandma in a movie.
That's weird. Like
that movie Tammy, she's the grandma.
Well, I mean, the age is right, isn't it?
What, 40 and 70?
Yeah, I mean, if they were knocking boots early, sure.
Wait, is Melissa McCarthy 40?
Yeah, I assume so.
Oh. Is it a step-grandmother?
No. His grandmother.
Well, then I guess that there were a couple generations of 15-year-old moms.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's 45. Melissa McCarthy's 45.
I had no idea she was that old.
And Susan Sarandon is 69.
That's pretty tight. Those are 12-year-old moms. That's two generations.
Listen.
That's two back-to-back generations of 12-year-old moms.
The math still works.
At 11.
the math still works out. Like, I don't know what you're, I don't know why you're trying to pull that thread. Living good.
Yeah. Wait. So I think that Sly looks amazing, right? I think Arnold is aging pretty normally, like a pretty regular human, right? That's my opinion anyway. But so the question asker actually said, Jen said, Van Damme and Arnold look awful. And so I looked up pictures of Van Damme, and he is only 55. And if I look at his picture, I just say that he looks at least 55. Like, he's... But you know what else? He had a history with cocaine that was in the news, and maybe it was from like his rough years. And now he's in great shape, though, even though he's not all big and buff. What do you guys think?
I mean, he didn't have a history. He had like a history book.
Yeah. Yeah, like JCVD kind of touched on that pretty hard.
Yeah.
But like,
it should be called JCVDC.
And here's my weird like. In like my opposite world answer too, like despite the fact that he looks old and weird, like didn't Mickey Rourke actually get a lot of plastic surgery?
Oh yeah,
he went to boxing
allegedly,
right?
But he doesn't look young. You just see like it looks like he got his eyes done or his lips done, but yeah, the rest of him still looks old.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, went to boxing. That's why he had to get the surgeries, right, or something.
Yeah, he got punched a lot.
Yeah,
he did.
Listen, I'm not. He was a handsome man, like back in the day. I'm not.
Yeah, he was swarthy.
Yeah, but like these days, it's like, yeah, you look. You don't look like Mickey Rourke, dude. I don't know what happened.
And Nick Nolte.
So, can you guys think of a male actor who's a little older who you specifically do think allegedly had a lot of plastic surgery? I'm not even used to thinking this way.
Nope.
I've never thought about it.
Yeah, like that.
Maybe they do this themselves, but I feel bad that people feel forced to change their look to stay relevant in Hollywood. Like, yeah, that kind of breaks my heart a little bit. So people do it to stay.
I'm going to throw this out there. I have no evidence at all.
Allegedly.
This is all just speculation, but.
You're going to say Ryan Gosling has butt implants, aren't you?
Yes. Butt implants. Get the. Get that thigh gap going. But no, I think maybe Brad Pitt, maybe. He's getting up there. Like, I don't know if like he wants to take the Clooney route where he just age with grace. I don't know. Because Brad Pitt's like always been known to be the pretty boy. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. You think he has maybe gotten a little work done?
I don't know. Because like, you can tell he's older these days. I don't know. I'm talking out of my behind here. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm just throwing stuff on the wall.
You know, I wonder if a bunch of male actors would actually really love to, but maybe the Hollywood like double standard would turn against them.
Yeah.
Like if you could really tell that a guy got a dramatic change, almost like a woman getting breast implants, like that guy may be scoffed or shamed like quite in the opposing way.
Sure.
I don't know. Not that women never get that treatment. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird thing. I'm going to start thinking differently now, though, when I see some of these older, really sleek-looking male actors.
Yeah.
According to the interview, Rob Lowe is bald.
What?
That was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that is, by the way, a strikingly good-looking, like, 50-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, he has always been... Yeah. A really striking looking person. So I guess it's not necessarily a reason to be suspicious.
Well, actually, how about Tom Cruise?
I think you nailed it. The eyes?
Allegedly.
You know, we've called out Tom Cruise before and he didn't call back. Tom Cruise, I'm saying that you got plastic surgery.
No, they listen. Paramount listens. I had to take down a Jack Reacher. Oh, I don't know if I can say that.
you've already said it. You might as well just go with it.
I had to take
no,
down.
No, no, no.
I got a message, and I had to take down a picture on one of my reviews for Jack Reacher.
Oh, okay.
It was an angry blogger.
It was a outdated poster or something. I had to take down the thing.
Huh.
I don't mess with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
They're watching.
Dude, a podcast listen is far more valuable than a page view on the website. So if they're really listening to every episode, more power to us.
Hey, you should get 10 people listening to this.
Yeah.
And then subscribe and review.
It's like, yo, Paramount, I hope you have like 4 different people listening in case you miss something.
I'm speaking in codes. Get Turing on here.
That's right. Get Alan Turing on this business. Get it going.
Yeah, get an algorithm, folks.
You know what's weird? I saw that movie like a couple weeks back. I didn't know what's his face. I don't know his name. Like, but the guy who plays Tywin Lannister.
Oh, like, Charles Dance.
Dance. Yeah. He's like, he's in the movie. I'm just like, oh, that's Tywin. Like, I don't even know what his character's name is.
Dude, he's in everything, man. I love him. But you know, now whenever I see a movie from 20 years ago, I'm like, hey, that's Tywin.
He was in Last Action Hero. He was the bad guy.
Yeah.
That was amazing. I'm like, oh.
Oh, okay. The bad guy with the glass eye that was like a bullseye?
Yeah, that was him. Same guy.
Damn Tywin.
Yeah. All right. I guess that does it for this episode, right? I think that's all the listener questions.
Yeah.
I think we've thoroughly kind of answered them like we do every listener question. Mm-hmm. All right, so now we're done with listener questions. Time to move on to the topic, right?
That's right. We're going to go through the entire Godfather trilogy.
All right. Mark, I think this is your topic this week, right? We're actually going to sign off. But before we sign off, are there any plugs we want to make?
Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, guys. We'd love to hear what you think. Also, Paramount, don't sue me.
Yes, please.
Thanks, Mark.
Check out my other shows if you like me, and I know you probably do. But check out sharkjarbar.com. I'm on a handful of different shows here and there. Right.
Wait, hold on. Let me give you a real selling point.
Okay.
I am on one half of one episode of the Shark Dropper podcast. So guys, come on, just start listening until at least you get to me.
Okay. I think that was like 100 and some.
That was your 100th, wasn't it? The one with the...
It was like 100. It was 100 and like another one afterwards, right? Or was that...
Yeah, I was in the one where you did Star Wars The Force Awakens.
That might have been...
Like, I was with Black Santa.
Yeah.
Among your guests.
Yeah, that was an interesting episode. But yeah, check out sharkjarbar.com. Rate, review, all that jazz.
The lamb. Let's go to the lamb.
Yeah, the large-ass movie blog.
.com. You'll like them. I did a podcast, the 1950s movie draft. They question Kurt Russell's shirts. You can get over that.
I think that's it, right?
Yeah. And go to Levengood's new podcast, John Levengood's Dance Party, where he records audio of himself dancing. I don't get it, but I feel like I'll understand it better in 10 years.
It's just this
that nice. That podcast is really just my email where you can send me listener questions.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, guys. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Hitman.
John Lemgood.
Hitman 47. I don't know the answer to that.
I've been your host, Timothy Oliphant. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.